The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
Answering your top financial questions for the past 20 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for joining us, both myself and my co-host. We're both financial advisors, practicing financial advisors. We spend our Monday through Friday helping people like yourself plan their financial future. We come here on the weekends on the radio to be your financial advisors on the air. And we're excited to be here today. And if you're tuning in for the first time, you're thinking, are these guys new? No.
We're new to you.
Some of you. We've been broadcasting this program for over 20 years out of Northern California. Originally started in KFBK in Sacramento, same station that Rush Limbaugh started.
Yeah, and many other. Morton Downey Jr., whatever made his name here. I have no idea what happened to him. I don't know if
I haven't even heard that.
I don't know if I should have mentioned it. I don't know if that was good for the show or not.
Either one of those guys. Anyway, and then we've been on KGO at a San Francisco for a while. And beginning this year, we're excited because we are also in Los Angeles on the Patriot. Glad to be here on the Patriot. We're in San Diego on KOGO.
Thank you for having us, San Diego.
Absolutely. And in Denver on KOA. So three new markets for us on beginning of the year.
You'll find that it is a easygoing call-in financial talk show.
And if you like what you hear, you can go to our website, moneymatters.com.
It's a little early in the relationship.
No. To get a podcast of this program. Maybe that's for some.
And then we're driving them to our website. If you want to go to moneymatters.com, there's other shows. That's a good point. If you like, by the end of this, and you say, hey, that wasn't too painful, I want more. You can go to moneymatters.com, and you can listen to a podcast of the show.
That's right. You can get podcasts of our previous shows and everything. But what we'd like to do here is we talk about all things financial. It's not really a program about trying to pick the best mutual fund. So if you call regarding a specific mutual fund, we probably not that interested in taking your call because considering there's thousands of mutual funds, it may not be that interesting to the person who does not own that particular fund. And we think, frankly, the financial planning process is really the most important thing, what the process is. And so we'll talk about what's happening in the news, and we take a lot of different financial calls. And people call with questions about their retirement. Can I afford to retire now or can I not?
Do I need a living trust or a will? Or how should my beneficiary designation
go? I want to save money for my grandkids. How do I go about that?
Should I pay off my mortgage? Should I borrow more money?
Should I use a reverse mortgage? How do I get out of this annuity that the bank broker sold me?
Oh, I hate those calls. I hate those calls. I like the calls. I hate the stories.
They're going to tell me you hate those people. I was going to say, that's a little rough.
But talking about banks, I don't know if you saw this, Scott. J.P. Morgan, one of the largest bank by assets in the country, was just fined by assets. I did not know that either. $300 million to settle allegations of putting clients into bank-owned investment products. Bank-manufactured investment products.
How much was the fine?
$300 million. No, it was to settle allegations.
So, no, they never admit there any wrongdoing. Well, no. Anyone in the financial services.
So the SEC, $267 million, and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission got $40 million out of J.P. Morgan.
Well,
here's the point. It's not that their investment products were bad or good or indifferent. It's that they didn't disclose the inherent conflicts of interest to the person that they were recommending the product to. And this is the difference between commission and brokered.
Yeah.
Right? A commission broker versus a fiduciary. $300 million.
Well, and the fact is there's some good advisors at some of these big banks.
There's great advisors there.
But they operate under this conflict of interest when your manager's saying, hey, we need you to sell some more of this. We got a lot of this sitting on the shelves. We need to get it out. That's what happens. Think about it like any other retail distribution chain. That's exactly how it is with the banks, brokerage firms. It's retail distribution.
Yeah. They it's more profitable for them to recommend a house manufactured product. Or they weren't disclosing some of the fee-sharing agreements with other investment institutions.
Back-end deal. So that's why we're big fans of advisors being fee-based registered investment advisors. That's how our firm's structured, and it's how a lot of good advisory firms are structured across the country. And not to say that all advisors in the big firms are bad. They're not. There's some good ones, but they operate under these conflicts, and it's important that you understand what some of these conflicts are. So that's a big.
That's a big.
Of course, the regulators have been squeezing the banks. It's in vogue to squeeze them for everything, isn't it?
Quite frankly, it's like it's been a pretty easy picking for the regulators to take money out of the banks. The banks don't fight back very much in this environment.
They don't. I mean, it seems like every couple of weeks there's another settlement in these banks.
Yeah, they don't fight back.
Doing this bad, doing that bad. Anyway, this program, of course, we talk about what's going on in the financial world, and we take your phone calls. And if you'd like to be part of the program, it's quite simple. Our contact number to join us is 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And by the way, when my family first came over to the States, it was Hans Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N, and somehow he thought it was bad, so he changed his name to Hansen, H-A-N-S-O-N.
His first name was Hans?
Hans Hansen.
Hans Hansen.
Anyway, to join Hansen McLean, 1-888-2-HANSON, that's 2-H-A-N-S-O-N.
Yeah, let's take a call.
Let's talk to William. William in Pennsylvania. William, welcome to Hansen McLean's Money Matters.
Hey guys, quick question on an expected return. It's reasonable to use the plan on a 65-35 portfolio, given where bond rates are at.
Yeah, that's a good question. And over what time frame?
Probably 13 years or so.
How old are you today, William?
52.
52. Okay. So if you look back historically, right? If you went back the last 50 years and you looked at a portfolio like you've got, you might say, oh, I could probably use a 9 or even a 10% rate of return assumption. But you're obviously wise, William. You look at the interest rates today, and you're thinking, my fixed income portion of the portfolio is earning a couple percent. What do my equities need to earn in order for me to have a decent return? What might that be going forward? And I think for prudent investors today, really a 6 to 8% range is probably an 8% might even be challenging over the next 5 years. Over the next 25 years, we believe interest rates will probably come back up again, and we can all have an opportunity as investors to earn more on our safer money. But when you're in an environment today,
where the 10-year treasury is about 2%, a little bit over 2%. And how old did you say you were, William?
52.
Okay. So going forward, if you looked at 10 years, and remember, you've got to look at it net of fees and cost, because you could mix a portfolio of indexes together, a theoretical portfolio of indexes together, but the indexes actually have no trading cost associated with them and no fees in custody. They're just numbers on a page. So I would look at, I agree with Scott, 6 to 8, and I'd be most comfortable using the lower of the two, 6, as a net of fees.
Yeah, I think I can make it work if I just get 5. So
perfect.
Oh, good. Perfect. And here's the thing. We always like to be conservative in the planning. It's always okay if you get down to retirement and have too much money, right? But if you are really aggressive in your planning and you get to retirement, it's not so good. And I actually remember working with a couple years ago, and early in the 2000s, they retired young, and they wanted to use a very aggressive return assumption to enjoy an early retirement. And I remember the conversation I had. I said, look, if you do this, and if things don't work out like you've planned, you're going to find yourself at a real retirement age with not as much assets. And they said, well, this is the chance we want to take. And so they actually retired early and used a real aggressive rate of return assumption, and it has not worked out well for them.
Yeah, and that's why you want to be a little bit more conservative in the return assumption. So,
okay.
Appreciate the call.
Yeah, thanks, William. I mean,
So I was having this conversation with my brother-in-law. I believe in actively managed portfolios. I believe in index portfolios. But the whole idea that, I read this, 70% of all mutual funds underperform their index. Index funds underperform their index.
Well, of course.
They have to. Because there's a cost associated.
A little bit of cost. They underperform it ever so slightly. The good ones
ever so slightly.
But when you read this index, most funds underperform their index funds.
100% of index funds underperform their index.
Correct. Their averages are worse than everyone else's.
Here's how twisted we are. We find humor in internet. This is interesting to us. Wow. Think about that.
Actually, no wonder my brother-in-law said, "Can you give me another beer?" I was telling him that.
This wasn't a breakfast meeting, was it?
No. I mean, we're not that Irish.
Nice. But you know, when you look at active, and there's a lot of discussion right now between actively managed and passively managed. And we use a lot of index funds, by the way,
and we like them. But I think there's a place for actively managed. The world is not black and white.
But by its very nature, half of funds are going to underperform and half will overperform because the market would be the middle of them all, right? That would be the market. So we're taking a quick break here. If you'd like to join us, we still have a couple lines open. We'd love to take your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, it's 888-2-HANSON. Again, 888-2-HANSON. Hanson's H-A-N-S-O-N. Would love to take your call. Stick around here for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-242-6766. Helping you take the worry out of your retirement. It's back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean, thanks for joining us in those new markets, San Diego, LA, and Denver.
That's right. Assuming they're still tuned in.
Well, let's
hope. They didn't tune out already.
Well, let's give us a couple weeks, please. Just give us a couple weeks. See if we grow on you.
Yeah. Hey, before we go back to calls, interesting that this last year, 2015, we saw a few things interesting for the financial markets. We saw the junk bond market, the high yield market,
just
particularly the
beat up
illiquid portion of it, and that was largely driven by oil commodities, but oil really
because they were borrowing heavily. To
a lot of these companies, fracking companies,
infrastructure, pipelines, all types of high risk instruments in order to extract oil or petroleum products.
Yeah, and there were a lot of these bonds, and a junk bond is just a fancy term for, it's not fancy, it's a derogatory term for a high yield bond, a bond that for issued by a company that doesn't have the most stellar credit rating.
And therefore, they're paying higher interest rate for the risk that you're taking on lending them money.
So they look at the yields look attractive. And there's oftentimes a piece in a portfolio for some portions of high yield bonds.
But small portion.
What we saw this last year is that portion, particularly that portion that was tied to the oil and gas industry exploration, even more so, got hammered.
Beat up.
I mean, big time. And so much so that there was a mutual fund that had a significant portion of its portfolio in some of these bonds that they came out and said, "Hey, we can't let our investors get their money back." So they came out and said, "We are going to disallow any redemptions."
And they're allowed.
We haven't seen that since the financial crisis.
They're allowed to do it, but normally they have to petition the SEC and ask permission. They just did it.
And well, they did it the same day that they told the SEC we have to do this. It's supposed to be for a state of emergency.
Yeah.
The last time we saw that was in the financial crisis with some money market funds. But Third Avenue Focused Credit Fund halted liquidations the end of
the yields last, were high.
Well, they were.
Yeah, they were high. If you've been a longtime listener to this show, in Northern California, we always warn that the higher the yield, the bigger the risk. There's a reason they pay that high yield. There's a reason they pay the high yield, which is the risk associated with that lending that particular institution money.
Well, and further with the oil and gas, the master limited partnerships that were being pitched a couple years ago. I remember we had some calls on this program. Hey, they're yielding 9%. They're yielding 11%. Brokers were selling them because these firms were manufacturing some of these.
Yes.
They're being pitched. We didn't recommend them to any of our clients because they just – and, of course, when you see oil prices fall and these –
they just got beat up.
Dramatically so. And so just a reminder, not to say that if you own these, you should be selling them. Maybe just the opposite. We're not sure. But
Just, you need to be careful, particularly if you're shopping for yield. 1-888-2-HANSON to join the program. 1-888-2-HANSON.
Let's go to the phones.
All right, let's talk to Arnold. Arnold, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, this is Arnie Hanson. How are you doing?
Excellent, sir.
Hey, I have a couple of questions about the required minimum distribution from tax-deferred accounts.
Okay.
I hate to admit it, but I'm going to be 70 and a half in August of next year. My wife is 67. We're both retired. And I have a 457, a regular IRA, a Roth, and my wife has a regular IRA. And my questions are, can I total all of the accounts except for the Roth, calculate the required minimum distribution, and take the distribution from just one account? And when and how does my wife's account fit into the required distribution? And lastly, when does the first distribution have to be completed?
Great questions. Common questions, great questions.
Yes.
I'm going to answer your last question first. Okay. You must start taking distributions no later than the April 1st following the year in which you turn age 70 and a half.
So for you, that would be April of 2017.
Okay, that's when I have to start.
Yes.
No, yeah, must have a distribution no later than that April 1st. The challenge, if you wait until 2017, you'll be required to take a distribution that first quarter prior to April 1st. Then you'll be required to take a distribution by December 31st of that year.
For that year.
Okay.
So you may want to take your required minimum distribution this year so that you don't move yourself up into a higher marginal tax rate.
Okay. So when I do my taxes this year, I take the required minimum distribution and then I'm set to go.
Yes. Now, the second question you had, which is, hey, if I total these all together and take the required minimum distribution out of just one of the accounts, is that allowable?
No. It is. If you had three IRAs, you can do that with the IRAs. But when you have other previous employer-qualified plans, you've got to take it from that plan.
So you said you have a 457 and one IRA or two IRAs?
One IRA, one Roth.
I have a 457 and a regular IRA.
Okay.
And I think the Roth doesn't count.
That is correct. That is right. Yeah. So you need to do one from the 457 and the regular IRA. I do have a question for you.
Okay.
Why do you own this 457 still?
The 457 is with ICMA from the city of Sacramento, and I've had that since 1970.
And what is the investment inside of it? Do you have the stable value fund, or do you have a mutual fund?
It's a stable value. Primarily, it's kind of a safe investment.
Okay.
Probably 40.
I would leave it there. I would. And the reason is that stable value fund. They're hard to buy that particular fund in an IRA. You're not going to get something similar. If you said, "Oh, I have stock mutual funds in there," I would just continue. I would move the money into an IRA. But the 457, leave it there. You're fine.
Okay.
And then your wife, when she reaches age 70 and a half, you just need to take a distribution from her IRA. There's really no commingling at all.
Okay. So I don't have to total hers in?
You can't there for sure.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with that.
Okay, because it was confusing when I read
tax
IRS
code,
publication.
IRS publication being
so
confusing?
There is one thing I would point out. Check your beneficiary designations on your 457 plan.
Okay.
If you haven't recently. So make sure your wife is listed as a primary, and then the kids are listed as a contingent.
They are.
Okay. I would just check that. And we have on our website, moneymatters.com, there is a couple articles that speak to this.
Yep, and tables, et cetera, for the requirement of distribution.
Yeah. So if you need more information, go to moneymatters.com. Or you can call our show whenever you want.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for being part of Hanson McLean. Have a great rest of the weekend.
All right, you too, and take care.
Thanks. Arnold. Why we're on this matter, Pat, because often you were alluding to rolling the 457 over to an IRA. And there is a strategy, a tax strategy. If you either currently work for an employer or have worked for an employer where you've had employer stock in your 401k or in your ESOP, you're going to want to listen.
Okay? Yes.
So there's a strategy. What's known as net unrealized appreciation. Here's where this comes into play. You got an employer savings plan at work, 401k, an ESOP, profit sharing plan that has employer stock in the plan. The actual, you are an owner of the shares in the company. When you retire, if you transfer that 401k or other profit sharing plan into an IRA, you can roll it to an IRA. It's a tax-free event for you, right? There's no tax consequences for doing that. And almost everything you read will talk about the benefits of a IRA rollover and why it makes sense. If you just do that, you are going to be giving up a potential of phenomenal tax savings.
Which is this net unrealized appreciation of that stock in the 401k.
So here's how this works.
I should point out, it has to be stock. It can't be units. So some 401ks, you think you own stock because it shows, but you own units that are representative of the stock, not the stock itself.
You own some derivative. It's not the actual shares. So you actually have to be an owner, a direct ownership inside the company. But here's how
it works. In your 401k.
Let's assume that you have stock valued at $100,000 in your 401k. And let's assume that what you paid for those shares over the years, maybe your contribution including what the employer's contributions were, let's assume that it was $10,000. Okay, so let's assume you work for a company that's done phenomenally well. Stock price went up in a huge manner. So it's $100,000 worth of stock in the company retirement plan, and your cost base is what you paid for. It's $10,000. You roll those into an IRA and then pull the $100,000 out. That $100,000 will be taxed to you as ordinary income, okay? Whether it's rolled in or you just take it. Now, if instead you say, rather than rolling these into an IRA, company, please take all the rest of all of my excess dollars and those funds, transfer that to my IRA, but take the shares and just send them home to me.
Send them directly. Do not roll the shares over.
And although you say you're supposed to withhold 20%, you really don't have to on the stock. So if you think you do, let me talk to a supervisor. I'm going to nail this, get this thing.
You've done this before.
Yes. Have the shares transferred directly to you. When the shares are transferred directly to you, what's taxable to you is not the $100,000 value, but the $20,000 cost basis.
What you paid for them.
And you're saying, well, why would I want to incur a tax liability? Well, when you subsequently sell those shares, you'll have favorable capital gains treatment.
Not ordinary income.
Plus, let's say it's a stock that produces a dividend. You can hold the shares. The stock will pay out a qualified dividend to you, which is favorable tax treatment, not ordinary income. So the tax ramifications regarding this they're phenomenal.
So if you're listening and you are saying, well, this kind of makes a little bit of sense, I would tell you it is filled with landmines. Don't do it alone.
Yeah, don't do it alone.
Your company is going to mess it up.
Yes. Every time I've done it with help.
We have never had one go smoothly. But we do them.
Yeah. Not every day, because they're kind of a rare thing.
But when the right situation. But when we do them, we tell the clients, look, don't get mad at us. Your company is going to mess this up. They are so rare, no one knows how to actually handle them. But it's in the tax code, and it's got incredible tax advantages. And it's if you will, a loophole.
Net unrealized appreciation. I don't know if it's a loophole.
Well, you know what loopholes are, Scott. It's a long slit in the side of a castle that you shoot an arrow through.
We discussed this on the show.
I was in Ireland. I went to a castle and saw the loopholes.
You did?
I did. Recently.
Okay. Pat goes exciting. To Ireland. Pat finally takes a vacation and goes to Ireland for a couple days. How long did you spend in Ireland?
3 days.
3 days. That's a kind of McLean vacation. McLean's went to a family vacation years ago. They were supposed to be gone 2 weeks to Europe, right?
Yeah.
4 or 5 years ago. He came back early. What are you doing early? We were just done. What do you mean? Yeah, we're done.
We were done.
Weren't you on a cruise? Yeah. But you left early. Yeah, we're done.
We were done. I did not. I'm not.
Anyway.
The idea of cruising is much actually. Anyway, so these loopholes.
Anyway, the concept is net unrealized appreciation. We highly recommend if you have employer shares in your retirement plan, before you retire, before you roll those dollars over into an IRA, talk with a qualified advisor, a Hanson McLean advisor, or somebody else who's qualified in this matter, to have a discussion regarding this. You're going to want to do this correctly, because once it's in the IRA,
you can't do it.
This tax benefit's gone.
It has to take place in the transfer from the 401k.
And it could it can mean tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, or millions of dollars in tax savings to you, depending on how much company stock you've got there. So we're going to take a quick break here. 1-888-2-HANSEN if you'd like to join the program. We do have a couple lines open. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSEN. That's 1-888-242-6766. Get a podcast of Hanson McLean's Money Matters delivered each week to your computer or mobile device. Simply visit moneymatters.com. And now, back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Matt McLean.
Let's talk with Brian. Brian, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
All right. Thanks for calling, Brian.
I had a question about either paying off a mortgage on a rental property or using that money to invest. My wife and I moved right when the peak of the market occurred, and then it crashed, and we were unable to get out from underneath our original home.
Yeah.
We turned it into a rental property.
Okay.
And as the years have passed, we kind of are looking at it now as an investment property potentially to sell when the kids get to college, or maybe a property to keep for when the parents get old and need to move close by.
Okay.
Currently, we're losing about $1,200 a year on it because the rent won't support, all the costs and insurance and everything else. But I have the means to pay the thing off. With about $100,000 on the mortgage remaining, and I'm just not sure. Ultimately, it would wind up saving me probably about $20,000 in interest.
What's the interest rate on this?
3.875.
Do you have the cash now?
I do.
And where did it come from, the cash?
Slow accumulation and savings.
Okay.
We actually have maxed out our 401s and 403s and all of that stuff.
How old are you, Brian?
41.
How old are your kids?
6 and 9.
And how much do you owe on your primary residence?
About 250.
And what's the interest rate on that?
2.9.
What do you think you should do?
We're already pretty heavily in the market through our retirement investments. So I'm kind of leaning towards paying the thing off and actually turning it into a positive cash flow.
We agree. I like that.
I do too. And you can look at it two ways, right? You obviously have a pretty good understanding of how this works. By paying that down, it's the equivalent of you having a bond portion of your portfolio that's earning 3.875%.
Correct.
Which isn't a bad interest rate in this environment. And not only that, it would bring some financial security to your life. I like the idea of you're looking at your kids at age 6 and 9 and knowing that you're going to need some money in 9 years. And you can either sell the home at that point in time or use that income that is derived from that. You know what I would actually do? I would actually pay that off, and I would start funding the 529 plans with the proceeds from the mortgage, from the rent. Because you've already maxed your 401k
and
403b.
Correct.
And are you funding the 529s now?
We are. We currently have
How much do you have in the 529s?
It's 117 right now.
You already have 117,000 saved for your kids?
Yes.
For each kid?
No, that's total. So it's one 529 that I would just, change the beneficiary.
Yeah, this guy's got it going on. Brian, you got it going on. You sure you don't want to host this show?
Yeah, why don't you go lease a new car or something?
Come on.
Wheels.
Listen, you got to watch more ads.
No.
I would do that. I would increase the funding on the 529.
Here's the thing. I bet there's some listeners right now thinking, what are you out of your mind? Why doesn't he go out and buy another rental? The thing is, leverage cuts both ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
When asset prices are going up, if you're leveraged, great. It's going to work out well for you. But when things go the other direction, It cuts that way as well. That's why so many people were underwater on homes a few years back, right? And you had that experience of what things can happen. It seems, looks, I mean, when everything else is going so well in your financial life, I mean, you're maximizing your 401ks, you've got your kids' college savings already set up. Whether or not you pay this thing off is probably realistically not going to make any difference of what your retirement's going to be like 25 mm-hmm. years down the road.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. But if it's paid for, that's one less thing to worry about. Now that you've got some additional cash flow coming in, you can make some other decisions that,
it's
that
a
helps
good
you financially.
Just out of curiosity, are you, what do you, don't tell us where you work, but what do you do for a living? Are you an engineer or an analyst or something like that?
No, a physician.
There we go.
Physician, you don't sound like a physician either.
Honey.
You should be having a new port. Go get that big cup like a $200,000
Porsche. Well, that's not fair, Scott, because we have lots of clients that are doctors that are not pretentious.
Yeah, I'm driving a 9-year-old Honda.
Okay,
so. There you go.
But well, you know what I'm talking about. There's a lot of physicians that spend it all, too. So.
Yeah, I'd pay off that mortgage and then do the 529s.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, you sound, man, you're in great shape. You should do just getting out of medical school with all the student loans at 41. No, I don't know.
Thankfully, I got out from underneath that a few years ago.
Oh, good for you.
Good for you. Good for you.
All right, well, I appreciate the call.
You know, Pat, it's, I found this last call interesting because we tease him about he should go drive a fancy car. There is, not always, but oftentimes, an inverse relationship between someone's, the price of their automobile and the size of their net worth. Maybe that's a, maybe I'm being a little unfair.
I can say this, how someone lives and looks and acts and has what? Very little to do with, their financial well-being.
I remember Pat, this was, so Pat and I have been working together for almost 25 years, but Hanson McLean's been around about 22 years. When we were first started Hanson McLean, we're a small organization. Now we've got several thousand clients, over 4,000 clients now. And, just about every state, I think. But back in the day when we had just a handful of clients, I'll never forget whoever there was, we probably only had two staff or something.
Not many.
Some receptionists came and said, oh, you're 3 o'clock here, but is here, but I don't think you'd be, it doesn't look like he has anything to invest or anything. I said, well, why do you say that? Oh, he drives a real beat up old Datsun. And I said, yeah, but it doesn't mean anything. And sure enough,
he had plenty of money.
He had a very large net worth. Drove up an old. Matter of fact, I met with some clients. I mentioned Datsun. I met with some clients a couple weeks ago. Been clients almost 20 years, I think. Now I'm thinking about it. A long time. Very large portfolio. Datsun.
Yeah. So the point being is that how they look in their houses, and because we get to see under the hood, and we don't pass judgment. People come and ask for our opinion. We say this and that.
And there's nothing. Look, if you can afford a nice car,
drive
and you
a
want
nice
one,
car.
It doesn't matter, right? That's fine. I drive a nice car, but I didn't when I couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
And if it meant jeopardizing my retirement today, I'd certainly get rid of that fancy car. I was talking to somebody at the Mercedes dealership, and he was telling me he worked at the Mercedes dealership. He says, you would not believe some of the people that drive these cars. I said, what do you mean? He says the things that people will do in order to get themselves into a
Mercedes?
Yeah.
Really? Like borrow everything.
No,
obviously, we see that now. We see it in the credit markets.
What's average length of a car loan now? It's 9 years,
which
or something.
Which is crazy. But you see it in the credit markets right now with the car loans being packaged up and sold into the secondary markets, especially used cars. Especially used cars, lots and lots of used cars.
How about these loans? How about these loans where they'll? I know this because I sometimes listen to some hard rock. And the ads they play on the hard rock stations are not the same ads they play on the news stations, right? And they'll advertise where you can. They'll if your car's paid off, they'll give you a loan on it.
Oh yeah, pink slip loans.
Pink slip loans, yes.
Yeah, I don't call them pink slip loans. They put a little lipstick on that.
Yeah, thing. Make it sound a little nicer than it. But that's essentially what they are.
Yeah, it's negative. Pink slip loans, it's a negative connotation. This is a financial freedom automobile loan.
Financial freedom. You're just putting your car up as collateral. That's all. They can come repo it. Actually, where's my wheels?
You want, we can come by your house and look to see whatever anything else you could pledge.
All right, enough of this chat. We should go back to the calls.
We're talking with Carrie. Carrie, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, how are you today?
Hi, Carrie. We're great.
I have a question for you. I have about $2,000 in my grandson's account. He's four right now. And I was saving it for him for college. It's just in a regular savings account. Is there something else I can put that $2,000 in that would make a little bit more than he's making in a savings?
Your time frame is 14 years plus or minus before he actually starts spending the money.
Correct.
So when you say, can it make a little bit more, I will give you suggestions that the probability of there being more money there in his age 18 than in a savings account. But I can't tell you whether it'll be more or less tomorrow. And the reason is because it has risk in it. So there's a program that's actually, and you're in the state of California, if you go to scholarshare.com, you can open up a 529 plan for him. And a 529 plan is just a college savings plan. Inside that 529, you have all kinds of different investments. You can buy stocks, you can buy bonds, you can buy mutual funds. Most of them are packaged as mutual funds. And some have some fixed income or savings accounts just like you have now. The 529 gross tax deferred comes out tax-free.
As long as it's used for college.
As long as it's, and it's, more importantly, it's yours. It's your asset, but it's got your grandson's name on it.
And it's out of your estate, too.
And what that means is that if your grandson decides not to go to college, it's your money. You don't have to give it to him.
Okay.
And that's no.
It's kind of funny.
No, well, you know, we have thousands of clients. We have seen just about. I shouldn't say everything because every week we're amazed at new things. But the 529 plan gives you that option and the probability of there being more money invested that way versus keeping it in the savings account when the child reaches 18 are significantly higher. Of earning more money.
Right now, is the account in your name or is it in your grandson's name?
It's in my name in trust for him.
Okay, so it's not in a uniform gift to UGMA or UTMA account.
Does it say UTMA or UGMA on the account?
No.
Okay.
Perfect.
You're okay. You're okay. Yeah. So just take it out of there. Go to scholarshare.com.
One of the plans they have is what's called an age-based or age-weighted. I think it's called an age-based.
Age-based.
So what happens with this, Kerry, is that he's young right now, so it'll be invested somewhat aggressively because he's got a lot of time. And as he gets closer and closer to college, it becomes more and more conservative.
Okay.
And it's the same. I used a 529 for my four
too.
Children.
I opened up an account at scholarshare.com for my two kids.
And I actually recommended recommended one to some grandparents that are in a similar situation just this last week.
Oh, okay, great.
All righty.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate the call.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will continue. You're listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Got a question? Visit moneymatters.com or call 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Want more advice on financial matters? Check out moneymatters.com, where you'll find information ranging from retirement to taxes to insurance to investments. All on moneymatters.com. And now, back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you're with us as we talk about money. 888-2-HANSON to join the program. We're talking with Mark. Mark, welcome to Hanson McLean.
Hi, this is Mark. Are you with me?
Yes, sir. Thanks for joining the program.
Okay, so I'm concerned about my mother. She's about 80 years old, and she doesn't have a lot of income. But she's been investing in high income. She was in oil for a long time, getting a good returns on it. And she had about a drop in her portfolio from about 350 or so in the last year to about 250.
Oh.
So she continued to get the high yield, but she had a significant loss in principal. And at 80, she's not going to make that money up.
What did she own that caused this drop in the portfolio?
I'm not sure. She's out of it now because of some stop-loss orders cashed her out. Okay. So I said, Mom, you know,
can we back, let's back up. Just trying to get a better understanding. Has she been working with a broker for a number of years?
Or is she doing it herself?
A friend of hers.
And how long has this friend of hers been helping her?
I don't know if help 20 years.
20 years. And is this friend being compensated for this help?
No.
That is a substantial loss.
Yeah, it is.
What was her saving? How much did she have 5 years ago?
I don't know all the details. She was pulling out $1,300 to $1,400 a month out of this portfolio, and it was maintaining its balance.
Yeah, well, that is $1,400 a month, $1,500 a month, $18,000. It was about a 4.5% distribution on $350,000. Absolutely realistic, especially with an 80-year-old.
So did she have 5 years ago, did she have $350,000 or did she have $250,000? In other words, we're trying to...
No, she probably had about $350,000,
$400,000. Okay.
So what's your thought?
So my question is, the market has been volatile. She dropped this money. That money's not coming back easily. I said,
yeah, it wasn't in the. I don't know what it was in. It wasn't in the broad market. It wasn't in a diversified portfolio.
No, it wasn't diversified. So my question is, being that she doesn't know her life expectancy is 10 years, according to the table, she wants her money to last. I said, why don't you take half that money and put it in an immediate annuity in something like AARP New York Life, and they will pay her for. About her out of pocket, she'll be getting $1,000 a month from that.
What?
Immediate
annuity sometimes makes sense. You could either buy a commercial annuity through an insurance company like that, or you can buy one through a nonprofit like Salvation Army or the Red Cross or something. I don't know if the Red Cross has.
That's a gift annuity.
I know, but it's still a lifetime income you can get. But the question: what income does she have now?
So it has Social Security and some real estate rental.
And how much income does she need?
She's looking to get at least $1,000 a month.
Is that what she needs?
I think she needs about $1,500, but she said she could live on $1,000 income.
And how's her health?
Not so good.
I don't know whether I would buy half of an immediate annuity or not.
You would not if you're 80-year-old mother.
I would not. I don't know if I would be opposed to just putting it in the bank and drawing down principal.
Like a certificate deposit kind of thing.
The fact is she's had some market experience with if you put this portfolio on a scale of 1 to 10. With 10 being the most aggressive and 1 being the most conservative, she's been at 10.
Yeah, she has.
So how about?
I agree.
What if you had a really broadly diversified portfolio
and brought the risk to a three or a four? I agree with you, Scott. And was she comfortable with the portfolio?
When it was going up, she was.
Well, everyone is. Everyone is.
That's funny. If it were my 80-year-old mother. Look, if you said she's in the most phenomenal health, everyone in my family has lived to 105, she's going to live forever, she's unbelievably strong health-wise. The thing about immediate annuities, they do not do medical underwriting. Unlike life insurance, you go to buy life insurance, they do all these tests, and they say, whoa, this person's going to die young, let's charge them extra, right? They don't do that with annuities. So if you're in great health, you're in an advantage. Go out and buy this immediate annuity.
And if you're in poor health, you're not. So I agree with Scott. I think that I would actually build a moderate portfolio and put it in there. And maybe you use an investment advisor and you pay someone for their expertise and it's a fee-based investment advisor. Maybe she has no risk tolerance left.
S&P 500 index.
No, that's too aggressive. Yeah, it's too aggressive.
I mean, for 5% of her, 10% of her portfolio might be fine.
Yeah.
But ideally, you'd have a broad, I mean, for example, the kind of portfolios, I'm not trying to do a plug just for our firm, but the kind of portfolios that Hanson McLean does and other good fee-based investment advisory firms,
there would be a variety of different holdings. There might be some portion in S&P 500. There'd be some fixed income in there. There'd be some very conservative type portfolio pieces to the portfolio, a broad, diversified portfolio. And then you could set it up so that it sends her a check each month for $1,500.
Regardless of the account size.
And regardless of how the account does, you mean, right?
So, okay, correct.
So design the portfolio for total return, a check sent to her each
month. I would not buy an immediate annuity. Especially with the fact that you said her health is not all that great. And it's weird okay. that insurance companies don't medically underwrite.
I don't know why they don't.
Annuities, but they don't. So although there are some that have started medically underwriting annuities. But that being said, I think a moderate portfolio. And if she says, absolutely no, I don't want any risk whatsoever. I can't live with it. I would just put it in a bank account and draw down principal.
I would too. Because when you buy an immediate annuity, you're giving up.
That's what
you're talking
done.
About giving up half your principal.
That's what you've done is you've given up principal.
Okay, well that helps. Thank
All right.
you.
Appreciate
All right, Mark.
The call.
Yeah, good luck to you on that. And it's cool. it's never an easy time. And sometimes it's the challenge could be oftentimes we see as aging parents, you're stepping in trying to help them, and the emotions that can come along with it. And it's not just investing. It could be just paying the bills, too. Well,
yeah, it could be any part of it, right?
Or anything for that matter. But it's just one more thing.
It could be the siblings arguing over the care or who's got to contribute or how much time is being spent.
You mean like the text my wife received last night from one family member because of another family member caring for a loved one? And it was, yeah.
Yeah, like that.
Not to call out my wife's family. I'm just, I guess I did. Oops.
Well, fortunately, she doesn't listen to the show. Does she?
I don't know. If she, you're listening, I love you, babe.
Too late. As we head into the last 90 seconds of the show, I wanted to bring everyone's attention to this webinar we have on our website, moneymatters.com, moneymatters.com, how to select a financial advisor.
It's not a webinar. It's an ebook.
All right. Even better. It'll be quick.
It'll
be quick. I thought it was a webinar. I thought you recorded the webinar. It's an ebook. All right. It's called How to Select a Financial Advisor. You go to moneymatters.com.
And by the way, on moneymatters.com, we've got some great webinars. We've got some great videos. We've got podcasts of this program. We've got ebooks.
We have...
we've got it all.
Podcasts and ebooks and webinars. And some of the webinars you'll hear are extensions of the show. So we did one called Why Everyone Wants to Sell You an Annuity and We Don't, which if someone's trying to sell you an annuity, you might want to go to moneymatters.com and listen to that.
So you can learn.
Or How to Select a Financial Advisor. Or
The 7 Personal Decision Points for Retirement Transition.
Liars, Levies, and Lawsuits, the 3 Things Your Advisor May Not Want You to Know, which is a great screen that people should actually, I don't care who you're using, you should go through this screen in order to help select a financial advisor. Yeah. So if you go to our website, moneymatters.com, and you read the ebook, How to Select a Financial Advisor, and watch the webinar, Liars, Levies, and Lawsuits.
And we are grateful you joined us. We're new to the Patriot down in Los Angeles, COGO in San Diego, KOA in Denver. Glad you joined us. Tune us in next week. We look forward to joining with you again. Have a great rest of your weekend.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.